Okay, girls, I think this will be the last chapter. There's three chapters left in the book, but I think we can read the rest of them to the end of the book on this recording. So here we go. The next day, Mama called. Bertha talked to her first, soft and low, with her face toward the kitchen wall. I know, Carla, but think of Charlie. Not fair. Finally, she gave the phone to me. Hello? I said, and felt like a baby. Why couldn't I be strong and sassy-mouthed like Jackie? Then Mama told me how she can't wait for me to come home, and she's been so lonely, and nobody understands what she's been going through. And Jackie thinks she's so gall-darn grown up that she's not coming back home, and that's fine by me, she said. After that, she started on Scrappy. What a no-good-nothing he is, and how he left her high and dry. Doesn't anybody ever think about me, she said. I knew I wasn't really supposed to answer that, so I didn't. Scrappy got a tattoo of a blackbird in a cage on the back of his hand, I said. And guess what happened next? She hung up. Click. Just like that. What happened? Bertha asked. I shrugged. I guess she didn't want to hear about that tattoo. Bertha stood there, slack-jawed, looking from me to the phone and then back at me. Maybe y'all just got disconnected, she said. I bet she'll call back. So we stood there, staring at the phone while the refrigerator hummed and a cat purred beside us. But the phone didn't ring. Bertha shook her head. Nothing ever changes with her, she said. Carla, 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 it's always about Carla. And then she grabbed me by the shoulders and said, I'm sorry, Charlie, I shouldn't have said that. It's okay. No, she said, no, it isn't. She's your mama. I wanted to ask Bertha if I really was going back to Raleigh, but I was scared too. Hadn't she said she would make things right? But what did that even mean anyway? I decided to walk down to the Odoms, hoping my swirls inside would settle down. I clipped Wishbone's leash to his collar, and we set off down the road. I let him stop every now and then to sniff a tangle of weeds or inspect a tiny can that's on the side of the road. My swirly stomach didn't settle down until the Odoms' house came into view. Then, just the sight of it set things right again. That weed-filled yard was littered with balls and tools and shoes. Burl's legs stuck out from under the truck in the driveway. Music from the radio drifted out of Mr. Odom's shop in the garage. Cotton was lining up bricks along the edge of the road, and Lenny was swinging a baseball bat at rocks that hit the road sign with a clang. And then there was Howard, working on a crossword puzzle on the steps. By the time I got to the front porch, Mrs. Odom was already out of the door giving Wishbone a piece of cheese. I sat on the steps for a while, not talking, watching Howard working on his puzzle. The thing about Howard was, you could be with him and talk, or you could be with him and not talk. He liked you either way. We went inside to play Monopoly, which I personally think is boring, but Howard likes it. Wishbone got mud on the floor, but Mrs. Odom didn't even care. She brought us Jell-O and coffee mugs and let Cotton jump on the couch. I kept trying to make myself tell Howard about that squinty-eyed social services lady and how the situation at home had improved. I wanted to put a smile on my face and take a deep breath and say, "Guess what? I'm going back to Raleigh." But I just sat there eating orange Jell-O while Howard put another hotel on Boardwalk. Jackie called that night and told me she couldn't wait to see me again. She told me her new boyfriend, Jake, would take me for a ride on his motorcycle, and she could put blue streaks in my hair if I wanted. And I'm finally getting my very own apartment, Charlie, so you can have the bedroom all to yourself, and I don't want to go back to Raleigh, I said. Silence. I said, I don't want to go back to Raleigh, I hollered. How come? 'Cause I want to stay here in Colby. But I thought you wanted to come back. Jackie let out a big heavy sigh, and then she started with an, I told you this and I told you that. And what could I do but agree with her? She had told me all that, how I had Gus and Bertha treating me like a princess, and those good-hearted Odoms thanking the good Lord for me at the supper table, and how Howard was the nicest friend I could ever want, and how I had these beautiful mountains in that little porch under the stars. I just hadn't seen all those things until now. I'd been so busy making my wish that I hadn't seen things the way they really were. But Bertha's going to make things right, I told Jackie. What does that mean? She said. I'm not sure. Then she said she'd call again later, and I went to bed with my stomach so tangled up in knots I couldn't sleep. I laid my cheek against Wishbone's worn side and listened to his slow, steady breathing. I couldn't even think about that clothesline of troubles. Shoot, I had so many troubles that line was liable to fall right over. The next day, Mama called again. I could hear her voice clear across the kitchen while she talked to Bertha. Loud and fast, Bertha kept saying, "Slow down, Carla. What are you talking about?" Then she said, "Wait, what? Chattanooga? With who? For how long?" Bertha kept shaking her head, and her face got redder by the minute, and then she hollered, "What about Charlie? You know, your daughter." Bertha almost never got mad about anything more than a cat being, bringing a mouse inside, so it was a bit of a shock to hear her yelling like that. But then it got worse. She lit into Mama telling her how she needed to get a hold of herself and act like a mother, and how she needed to think about someone beside herself sometime. "So you're going to waltz up to Chattanooga and come back and be a mother when you're good and ready. Is that it, Carla?" And then Bertha was staring at the phone in her hand, and the silence on the other end felt heavy and sad there in the little kitchen. Am I going back to Raleigh? Popped out of my mouth when I wasn't even expecting it to. "No, you aren't," Bertha said. Then she told me she had some calls to make, and I should go down to Howard's. I told Howard everything, starting with the squinty-eyed social services lady telling us how the situation in Raleigh had improved, and ending with Bertha saying, "No, you aren't." And when I was done, he said, "Ain't Bertha the best?" And wasn't that so like Howard, finding the only good part of what thing when things are bad. I wondered what he thought about Mama, who just waltzes up to Chattanooga instead of making orange jello in coffee mugs. For a minute, I even wondered if he still wanted to be my friend, knowing my family was all broken up like it was. But that thought flew right out of my mind when he said, "Let's build a fort." So we spent the afternoon in the Odoms' dusty, ramshackle garage, searching for stuff to make a fort with. Scraps of wood, a warped table with no legs, a rusty stop sign riddled with bullet holes. Cotton kept following us around saying, "What about this?" and holding up something dumb like a broken hamster cage or an empty paint can. Wishbone liked to went crazy sniffing around for mice and chipmunks or whatever else might have been in that garage, chewing on bags of birdseed or nesting in the busted radiator. Lenny and Burl helped us drag everything to the woods at the end of the yard, and then Howard wanted to sit on the porch and draw a plan for the fort. Me, I'd just dive right in, but not Howard. He was a planner. We worked on our fort for a while, but it was too hot, so we went inside and laid on the living room floor in front of the fan. I stared up at the water-stained ceiling and said, "I hope I don't have to go back to Raleigh." My voice came out all quivery, and I had to swallow hard to keep the tears from coming. I hope Howard wouldn't say, "I thought you wanted to go back to Raleigh." He didn't. He said, "You're not." "How do you know?" "I just know." He said that so firm and sure that I felt better right away. After a while, Mrs. Odom came in and told me Bertha had called and that I should go home. So I tied Wishbone's leash to Lenny's bike and headed off to up the road with my stomach starting that familiar swirl again. What if Bertha hadn't been able to make things right for me after all? When I got back, Gus was home from work, sitting in a lawn chair, dunking turnip greens in a bucket of water. "Hey there, Butterbean," he called out when he saw me. Wishbone slurped up some of that sandy turnip green water, and me and Gus laughed. Bertha's cat, named Lula May, sauntered over and rubbed her head against Wishbone's leg. He gave me a mournful look, but he let her do it. Later, while Bertha put turnip greens and cornbread and tuna casserole on the table, she told me we would talk about everything after supper. I didn't know what talk about everything meant, so I just said, okay. But inside, I felt scared. I pushed tuna casserole around on my plate and didn't say much while Bertha told us about some friends of hers whose son ran off and joined the army. "Honest to goodness," she said, "the way she keeps crying and carried on, you'd think he'd jumped off a cliff." After supper, I helped her clear the table, and then we went out on the porch to eat peaches with vanilla ice cream. I watched the lightning bugs twinkle down below and waited for us to talk about everything. Finally, Bertha started. "So, Charlie," she said, "I talked to Social Services today and told them I didn't think your situation at home was improved after all. I told them I thought maybe they'd made a mistake."
"You did?"
"I did." Then she told me how they agreed to check on things. She repeated some of those social service kind of words like reevaluate and stable environment. "They promised they would get back to me in a few days," Bertha said. "Well, let me tell you, those few days felt like a few years to me. Worry followed me around every minute, making my insides flop around and my heart beat like crazy. Howard kept saying, 'Trust me, you're not going back to Raleigh.' But when I asked him how he knew, he said, 'I can't tell you, just trust me.' I wanted to trust him more than anything, but that ball of worry in my stomach just wouldn't go away. And then, of course, laying in the bed with Wishbone snoring beside me, I couldn't stop thinking about how wrong I'd been about everything here in Colby, how I hadn't seen all the good things Jackie saw right away. And then I found myself wanting to be more like Jackie again, and Howard, too, both of them always seeing the good in things. I put my head on Wishbone's warm side and made a promise to myself right there in that little room of mine. No matter how things turned out, I was going to try to see the good in things, like Jackie and Howard. I knew I'd probably always have to say pineapple once in a while on account of Scrappy's temper, and I have. But who knows, if I tried hard enough, maybe someday somebody might even call me good-hearted. Those few days dragged on, and every little thing I looked at nearly turned me into a crying baby, thinking I might be leaving. Bertha stirring grits on the stove with a cat at her feet. Gus out in the garden in his greasy baseball cap, picking nasty green worms off the tomato plants. Even the shed and the porch and the lawn chairs and the canning jars lined up on the shelf in my room made me sad. I tried to stay busy at Howard's, but then being at the Odoms like to broke my heart. That ratty old couch on the porch, the yard full of bicycles and balls and dirty sneakers, and of course Howard studying his fort plans like he was building a castle, and then heading out to the edge of the yard with that up-down walk of his. Finally, after a few days, the kitchen phone rang while me and Bertha were out on the porch eating egg salad sandwiches for lunch. She answered it and talked for a while, and when she came back out, the look on her face told me something good was about to happen. "How would you like to stay here with me and Gus, Charlie?" she said. My heart nearly leapt right out of my chest. "Stay," I said. Bertha nodded, "Stay. For how long?" Then Bertha said almost the exact same words that Jackie had said on her last night in my room, about how Scrappy was going to keep on being Scrappy and Mama was going to keep on being Mama. And then she told me as long as she had a breath in her body, she was going to make things right for me. I wanted to jump up and down and pump my fist and let out a cheer that would echo across the valley below us. I wanted to spread my arms like wings and fly right off that porch and out over the treetops and up into the clouds. I wanted to dance with Wishbone and then race down to Howard's to tell him the news. But what I did first was hug Bertha. "Yes, ma'am," I said. "I would like to stay with you and Gus." I hugged her one more time and added, "I would like that a lot." Bertha looked at me all teary-eyed and said, "Guess what I'm doing first thing tomorrow?" "What?" "I'm getting every single one of those dang canning jars out of your room." We laughed, and I asked if I could go to Howard's and tell him the news. So me and Wishbone raced down to the Odoms and up the porch steps. I banged on the screen door, hollering, "Guess what, y'all?" I didn't even wait for anybody to come to the door. I burst right into their living room, which I know was not a very nice thing to do, but I couldn't stop myself. Howard jumped up from the couch, and Mrs. Odom came running in from the kitchen and said, "I'm staying here. I'm not going back to Raleigh." Mrs. Odom hugged me and told me that that was the best news ever, and Howard just said, "Told ya." Then he gave Wishbone half a vanilla wafer and said, "I knew you were staying here." "But how'd you know?" I asked. "'Cause that was the other part of my wish," he said. "That day at the creek, I wished that you would be my friend and stay here in Colby." "You did?" he nodded. "Yep. And since the part about being my friend came true, I knew the other part would too. But I couldn't tell you because of that rule, you know, that one that if you tell your wish to anybody, it won't come true." Well, didn't that just beat all? Howard making a wish like that. On my way home, I thought about how I'd made my wish so many times and it hadn't come true. And there was Howard getting his wish on the very first try. Still, my heart felt like light as a feather as I turned up the gravel driveway toward Gus and Bertha's. That night after supper, we sat on the porch and ate blackberry cobbler and listened to Bertha's stories. And then, she said, "One time we ran out of gas in the middle of nowhere with three cats in the car. Remember that, Gus?" He nodded and said, "Yep." Then Bertha let out a big, contented sigh and said, "I never in my wildest dreams would have thought we'd have a family like this. Would you, Gus?" "A family like this? Is that what she'd said?" She had said that. A family. A real family. A family that cared about me and called me Butterbean and was going to take the canning jars out of my room first thing tomorrow. A family that wasn't broken. A family that I'd been wishing for all those times. I couldn't hardly wait till Sunday when I could find my flower in the Garden of Blessings and write my family on it. Suddenly, Bertha called out, "Star! First star! Everybody make a wish!" I looked up at the stars twinkling over the mountains, but instead of wishing, I just closed my eyes and breathed in the piney air. My wish had finally come true. That was a good story. I'm so glad for Charlie. I just love that story, and I love you girls. Night.